1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Local Youth Worker, a podcast brought to you by Reformed Youth Ministries. I'm your host, John Parrott. This is episode number 435, and I'm here with Linda and Scott. Linda, Scott, how's it going?
Good.
Good, John. Good to see you guys again.
Yeah, good to see you both as well. Scott, you and I were just together last week in Pennsylvania, Ligonier, Pennsylvania. So it was awesome to actually see you in person. I think, you know, we were trying to figure out if it had been 2 years or something.
Yeah, I think 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too long.
Yeah, I know. But it was nice to see you in person. Linda, that's not to rub it in your face that you weren't there with us. We missed you there, but you were with Scott the week prior to that in Montana, and you survived.
Right. I did survive. Yeah. Survived the snow. Survived the whatever Mammoth Springs is made of, fall in and get burned by acid. So yeah.
Well, and Scott, before you jumped on, Linda and I were talking a little bit, and she was bragging on your driving ability. She said that when you guys were leaving Yellowstone, like it wasn't a blizzard, but it was pretty steady snow coming in, and she wasn't concerned because you looked so confident driving.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of moments where maybe she kind of put her foot on the virtual brake there from the passenger seat. But yeah, it's so funny. You know, I told my wife later, I'm like, I probably was driving too fast for her. I probably should have slowed down. We're just so used to it.
I loved the time I got to go with you to Yellowstone, and it's one of those places I want to go back to. But I think when we went, Scott, you were telling me there's a book out there that's entitled Ways to Die in Yellowstone,
and it's Death in Yellowstone. Yeah. I pull those out for youth group talks. I haven't used them on a Sunday morning yet, but oh goodness.
I'm going to have to check that one out. But today we're going to talk about rest. Right before we're recording, we're saying, you know, we're always thinking about rest. We're always thinking about work. I mean, those two, you know, aspects of our days, they're always relevant to talk about. It's something we never arrive at, you know, to this work-rest balance. But, you know, I was speaking on the topic of rest last week at the summit. Linda, when you were in Montana, you were talking about rest to students. And then Scott, even as we were just at the conference together, talking about the idea of conferences, I mean, part of them is to foster rest. And so, you know, I thought it'd be good to revisit this a little bit and talk a little bit more about this. And so I don't know exactly where we want to jump in, but Linda, if you want to maybe just with your talk, I don't know if you want to give kind of an overview of what you tried to cover, or if there was something that just kind of stuck out to you that was maybe new this time, or anything you experienced while you were teaching on this topic at the retreat with Scott.
Yeah, maybe I'll go in this direction. So I know previously on this podcast, I talked about how I'd taught on rest at the Middle School Florida conference, and it was mostly the same material. So go find whatever podcast episode that was if you want an overview of it. But it was interesting just getting to when you teach on this for, you know, a few lessons over the course of a weekend, and you get to interact with leaders and students throughout it, just hearing some of the follow-up questions throughout. So there was a leader that came up to me, I think after the first lesson, and was just saying that her girls were all like, yeah, okay, like we really want this. We just don't know how to, like, how do I actually like stop and rest? And it sounded like they're just so kind of caught up in all the things they have to do and all of the maybe technology before them and all of this stuff. And they don't know how to kind of detox from that and lose, like go through some dehabituation and then also some like picking up new habits. It just feels like a muscle that's really, really underdeveloped. And I think that's a lot of what I'm seeing when I'm having conversations about rest with people now, is it's, they don't just need the information about rest and why we need it. They also then need someone to walk with them through that habit formation. They need someone to coach them in how to actually rest. And they need someone who can walk alongside them as they are trying to learn to rest, but all the like internal dynamics that come up as you're trying to do that and you're not used to doing it, they need someone to guide them through those sorts of things. I've even had some conversations with friends recently that said, like two different friends in the past week said some version of, I really feel like God is calling me to live a slower way or slower pace of life. Or they're wondering like, I don't know, I wish I could live a slower life, but I don't even know how to get there based on what my life looks like right now. And I don't know other people who are living that way either. And it feels like it'll take a lot of me learning to trust God to get there. I don't know. So those are a lot of the thoughts that I've kind of wondered recently about rest, if y'all want to take that somewhere.
Yeah. And you know, it seems like so quickly I want to go to smartphones. And obviously that's going to be an aspect of this conversation. You know, I mean, you talking about habits, you talking about people just feeling called to a slower pace. To me, it just seems like with social media and smartphones, the all of the information that's coming at us makes us overwhelmed. It makes us feel like things are so fast paced and we need to kind of pump the brakes. And so you wonder again, Linda, going back to your comment of if that's kind of the origins of that, if you were to talk to that person and kind of ask them a little bit more, they'd be like, oh yeah, absolutely. It's my media intake. It's what I'm feeding on. But Scott, yeah, please jump in on this, react to that as well, if you want.
Yeah. I think one of the things I remember, Linda, you sharing with the kids is that from the beginning, we were created in rest and to rest. In other words, like your picture of us in the garden or us as infants, there was this sense in which that for much of your life, when you start out, you're unproductive, right? But you're loved. You're dearly loved. your parents, you know, in a healthy home, they love this child dearly, even though you're taking away their rest. But you are incapable of being productive. And I think that made me think of the link between productivity and lack of rest. And so I think of the week last week, John, we talked a little about this. There was a sense in which I went to Ligonier to glean information and wisdom from speakers and workshops and teaching, but I understand my capacity for information. Even as I sermon prep for Sunday, I've got, you know, 10 different sources and notes everywhere, right? And it's got to come down to a lot less than that, right? And so I have always struggled with going to a conference like that and having to be at everything, having to be at all the talks, having to get all the information. If I don't get there and get all the information, then I'm missing out. I'm being lazy, right? And for me, I kind of went into the week really wanting the relational piece that goes along with all the great information that's there. And I found rest last week. Was that last week? That was last week. Yeah. I found rest in the relationships and not worrying about having to get all the productivity done that I needed to get done. And that makes me think of what you shared, Linda, just at how there is a link between rest and relationship. And we're born in rest and we're born relationship with our parents, with our creator. And the more we can, I think about this, there's also then there's a connection to security, right? So the more insecure I am when I go to something like a conference, the more I'm going to feel the burden, the stress, the work of trying to get everything done, get all the information, regurgitate all this back to my community, teach it all to the kids, teach it all to the parents. That's a burden. But if I have my security in Christ and his love for me and the care that he gives me as God as our Father, the more I long for rest, and I see it kind of like dessert, you know, it's like, I can't wait for this to come. Right.
Now I like that. I like how you said that. And, you know, as we're saying this too, I'm thinking just the sense of place and proximity of where we are in relation to rest that, I mean, Linda, before we started recording, I was talking about you just getting away to Montana, going to a different place. Mm-hmm. And then Scott, you leaving Montana, you going to Pennsylvania. And there's something about, I think, I mean, as this is coming out, most, not everybody, but some people have had their spring breaks. And so they're coming back from, you know, the break, but there's something about like changing our proximity, changing our location to try to foster rest. Linda, you want to react to that a little bit? I mean, just based on you going to Montana, Scott, whoever wants to jump in.
I don't know if this is exactly connected to what you're talking about, but one thing that just came into my mind is how like our surroundings can influence how much our brain feels rested or not. Like, I've had multiple people walk into my living room and that one of the first things they say is, it feels so peaceful in this room. And I'm like, I was just telling a friend the other day, I was like, I think that my nine wing on the Enneagram just really comes out in the way that I like decorate my home, I guess. But there really is something too, like if our surroundings feel chaotic, then it's going to be harder for like our minds and our souls to not feel chaotic too, right? And so maybe there's something about that with even like the broader space that we're in. Like if here in Orlando, it feels like, well, there's so many things I have to do. This is home for me. And sometimes that can feel chaotic, but getting to another place where there's really not anything for me to take care of, but me like enjoying my time away. I could definitely see how that, influences it on top of the, like when you're going away to a different place and there's a part of God's creation that's very different than what you're used to seeing. I think that's going to be really renewing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scott, any thoughts on that? Just sense of place and going somewhere to receive rest.
Yeah. I don't know if I can add much to what Linda said, but one of the things I always experience when I leave home, even if it's with my family, but in particularly if it's not with my family, is I experience a reminder of the beauty of the place I live. And I don't just mean, obviously we're in Montana, we're surrounded by mountains, it's beautiful, but it just reminds me of the good things that are in my sense of place back home, and I miss them, and it's good to be away from them. And I hope what I try to do is when I come back is maybe reset a few things. Like what is it that causes me to forget that while I'm here, right? What am I too caught up in? What are the blinders that are on that I need to remove them that keeps me from finding that rest in this place, right? Because it's good to go away and find rest, but it's obviously God meant for the Sabbath to be practiced in your place where you live, your regular daily practices, weekly practices, monthly, yearly. And so I think that it causes me to think through that a little bit more when I get to go away somewhere else, for sure. And it's interesting. I kind of look around and I see how I kind of absorb the culture and kind of what are the cultural values here and how would I rest if I lived here versus at home, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point because, you know, maybe it's some of what you're getting at too, is just kind of the grass is always greener, where sometimes it just takes us getting to go, you know, to the other pasture, so to speak, to realize how much we have, you know, back home. And like you're talking about in Montana, to kind of have some of those practices of how can I appreciate this more once I can return to it. And once I'm back in it, Scott, to go back to something you said earlier, just kind of knowing, you know, how much information you can take in and kind of knowing a little bit of pumping the brakes a little bit, pausing a little bit, stepping away. Maybe let's talk about margin a little bit, just, I mean, in that, but then just in all of life. But maybe just kind of unpack that more for us just a little bit, what you were saying of just kind of, I don't know if this is kind of through the years you've learned this process of just knowing yourself better. And that's what it is. But Linda, I'd love for you to talk about some margin as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I think it was in Kelly Capick's book, You're Only Human. He talks about the gift of finitude and how that really was formative for me, just thinking through the more I understand my limitations, the more I enjoy God's gifts, right? And I've learned over the years, you know, saying yes to too many things, packing the schedule, overwhelming others with information, overwhelming yourself with information, overwhelming yourself with activity at a core level is ignoring your brokenness, your finitude. And so I think that rest, seeking Sabbath, intentionally seeking Sabbath is a way to honor, the Bible when it says that, you know, there is none righteous, no, not one, right? We actually believe that. But the more we say yes to everything, the more we pack it all in, the more we try to overdo it, we're just forgetting. Like, it's just a too high view of self, you know? At our roundtable discussion, we talked about, with other youth pastors, we talked about the importance of the relationship between senior pastor and youth pastor. And I asked them, you know, how many of you, your senior pastor works probably every day, and they pretty much around the table said, yeah, that's a problem, right? And so if the senior pastor is working every day, it's expected that the youth pastor works 8 days out of the seven, right? Not seven out of seven. And so there just needs to be a better understanding of our brokenness, I think, within ministry.
Yeah. Man, that's good stuff. Like, so when it comes to margin and whatnot, yeah, there's a lot of ways that that has been impressed upon me recently. Even some other people that I work with were talking with me about a week ago and just talking about their practices of making margin in between meetings. There was someone that had a one-on-one meeting with me, and I think that like maybe a couple hours before he had a meeting with someone else at like a coffee shop, and then he realized like, oh, I have about an hour to kill before I need to meet with Linda over Zoom. Like, should I go ahead and stop by the grocery store that's right next to me on my way home so that I don't have to stop by it tomorrow? Like, on that would have been Saturday for him. Like, I could just get it out of the way. But he said he's learning to not fill all of his margin with things, right? And to instead give himself time to process and pray over the meeting he just got out of and process and pray over the meeting that he's going to come into. And that allows him to show up differently. And it was a meeting where he gave me a lot of really good counsel and advice for like projects that are before me. And I was like, wow, like I'm really glad that he took time to do that. Cause that if that influenced the way he showed up for this meeting, like that was very helpful to me. I think that it's so easy for us to not only fill all of the margin, but like Scott was saying, to really be taking in too much content and to be like overstimulated all the time in our culture. And when we have all of that going on and we don't have time to just chew on things and pray over things, that does not cultivate a deep interior life. and we need margin to be able to do it. Like, I think most people, if you thought about it, you would realize, oh, it's like, it's while I'm in the shower or while I'm taking a walk or doing things like that, that all of a sudden I have really creative or insightful things that come up. And like, there's a reason for that. Like, our brains need space to just kind of ruminate on things. I loved that there was one point during the retreat when I was in Montana where Scott just had the students like stop and do, I think it was like a 30-second like silent prayer before the lesson, right? Like, those are good things for us to do, because it gives ourselves a moment to just pause and see like what's going on in us, and like, how can I bring that to the Lord, and how can I ask the Lord to just speak to me rather than whatever's going on in me just continues on the whole time I'm listening to this content or whatever. But that has just been so helpful for me to think on those sorts of things. Do I have margin in my day to even do all of that? Or am I filling every space that there is with the next item on my to-do list? And if I'm not, then I don't know. I think I'm having a probably not biblical view of how to best use my time. Mm.
Yeah. And I mean, what you just said, I don't know if it's just aging, but I have just learned, and I'm not saying I've learned like I've arrived, but I'm learning the necessity of margin in my life. It's what I used to be able to do, I'm just not able to do anymore. And margin has become an answer to some of that. And really, I mean, going back into Kelly Capick, and have talked about him on this podcast. He's been on this podcast last week. I mentioned him, but just recognizing that we are these finite human beings, and we feel the toll that this life takes on us. And, you know, some of what I was talking about at the summit, as well as YLT in Nashville, was just, you know, God has given us boundaries, and we need to see boundaries as a good thing. You know, they're for our flourishing. They're not, you know, we can hear boundaries so often and think negative, but it's God and His grace saying, you can do these things and you cannot do these things. And, you know, there are certain boundaries, I would say, that are biblical, that, you know, the more we start to remove them, the more we feel that fatigue more. And, you know, even, you know, just stopping and thinking, okay, some of those things that are clear boundaries, we would say eating, we have to eat to survive. And that takes a certain amount of time in our life. That takes a certain amount of energy. We've got to block it off. Sleep, we need a certain, you know, amount of sleep every night. We have to get that. And I know that's going to be difficult for a lot of us. And we've got to have that communion with the Lord. We've got to have community relationships. We've got to have recreation. There are these things that we need, or we're going to start to burn out, and we're going to feel restless, and to recognize. And again, there's room for debate on some of these boundaries that we have, but to recognize we do have boundaries, and to try to think about what they are in each of our lives, and see ways in which we might be resisting some of those boundaries. And oftentimes that's going to just feed fatigue when we're not doing that. Scott, I feel like you've been quiet a little while, so let me just turn it over to you. What do you have for us?
Well, that's all really good. I was with what Linda said about the pausing. We actually do that every Wednesday. I tell the kids to, right before the teaching, to pray for 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and ask the Lord to, it's like, God, what do you have to teach me tonight? Right. And, you know, I don't know. I hope they do it. I think a lot of times they're probably taking that chance to whisper to one another and probably laugh, but whatever, it's there. It's an opportunity for them, which is what we're trying to do.
Well, look, I'm just going to interject to say, it's great you're doing that, because even if they're not, I mean, how often do our students sit in silence?
Right.
And so even if they're not praying, there's silence there. Right. There's this margin. Yeah. So I applaud you for it. That's great.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about something that we talked about at the end of the time with Linda up here. When we did something on Sunday morning before we did our worship service, where we did a question and answer time for Linda so that kids and leaders could ask her questions, and they had some good ones. I remember, you know, just getting down to like the practical, the nitty gritty for me about rest. And I'm embarrassed that I'm this long in ministry and this old, but I never, you know, I put on my calendar, I'll put day off, right? But I don't put the word Sabbath. And so one of the things that I learned when Linda came up and shared was that I have to be intentional about honoring the commandment to enjoy and observe the Sabbath, right? And I read Deuteronomy, I read Numbers, you read these books, you read the way God lays it out for his people, and he wants them to be intentional. He wants them to think about it. He wants them to think through, how am I going to rest? How am I going to celebrate this time that God has told me to reflect and ponder and give thanks and prepare myself for more work, you know, the following day. And so I've started in my calendar, just put the word Sabbath over one of the days, right? Am I consistent? No, because sometimes there are seasons where I might have to work 8 days in a row for whatever reason, but even if it's a little bit, but I have a day or two or three, well, the goal is the 4 a month where I have Sabbath written over it, right? And I'm going to do, and I'm going to talk with my community, my people, Allie, my three kids, and say, this is what I want to do on this day off. And that, you know, most of the time they don't care, but I want to make sure that I'm not, you know, being too individualistic with it, because community, the idea of rest is also a community idea, right? And so we can talk about individually how we're supposed to apply this to our lives and our ministry, but I think that the way I read and understand Sabbath in Scripture is that it's a community event, right? And so I think it's really important that you have people around you who are also talking about Sabbath, who are also encouraging you to take Sabbath, who that you might be taking Sabbath with, right? Those are some thoughts there.
Yeah, that's helpful. And just being that specific to, instead of just taking a day off, I mean, calling it Sabbath. I mean, thinking of it in those terms. I mean, you know, I heard someone years ago say, instead of calling it Sunday, call it the Lord's Day. And it's something about just calling it the Lord's Day, how it shapes the way we think about it. And similarly, I mean, Sabbath, I mean, that's a weighty word. That's a word, I mean, that we know causes a lot of disagreement and debate and all that kind of stuff. But to use an intentional word like that does involve, I mean, intentionality behind it to actually do it well. And of course, none of us have arrived and what that looks like. And it's always in flux, this side of heaven. And just constantly trying to interact with others, glean from others, converse with others on what that should look like. And the community aspect is, vital in that. I know we're going to start drawing this to a close in just a few minutes. Any other kind of points you guys want to bring up on this conversation? I know we've kind of just bullet pointed some things. So if there's anything you guys would love to just kind of zero in on before we close this out, I would love for you to do that.
Well, I have a question, if that's okay. Maybe Linda can answer, but if I told my dad's 83 this year, and he's lived in the same two counties in Ohio his whole life. He's lived back and forth in each of these counties. And the rhythms and patterns of his life are very different than the culture today. And I wonder, like, if you had thrown out the phrase I'm thinking of is self-care, right? So this word is coming out everywhere, right? You see this all over the place, self-love, self-care. Don't you think that's leading the witness? Is that a response to, is that a response to the fact that we are so burnt out? Is that the culture's response to the longing for Sabbath?
You said that question's to Linda, is that right?
Yeah, Linda. I want Linda to answer that.
I mean, so like part of my mind is going to like, well, I would want to trace the history of that concept so I could tell you if that's really where it came from. But that, I mean, that is an interesting thought, right? Is that the culture in response to our exhaustion and burnout, the culture can offer us self-care, right? Whereas I think the scriptures offer this fuller sense of shalom and rest for your souls. Yeah, so there's, and not that there's anything wrong with the term self-care. Like there's a lot of things that we would probably conceptualize underneath the term self-care that I think is included in good soul care. Like it's good for my soul for me to have margin. And that also is what a lot of people would call good self-care. Right. But there's more to the biblical picture of rest, especially rest for our souls. Yeah. I don't know. So that's an interesting thought.
Yeah. And it's a good question. I know there's been blogs that it seems like, you know, I've mentioned Redeeming Productivity plenty of times. Reagan Rose is on this podcast a few weeks ago. It seemed like he even had a podcast episode just talking about the idea of self-care. And I think, you know, we all could agree that there are kind of some biblical principles that are, you know, woven into maybe the world's idea of self-care, you know? And so, yes, it can be very self-focused and just selfish and all about me. But then as you're bringing up, Linda, there's just soul care. And I even think of, and I cannot remember which pastor theologian talked about that the most important thing he could offer his congregation is his own holiness, you know? And understanding that in the proper context, he's saying he needs to be communing with the Lord deeply to truly give his people, you know, a deeper sense of God's word and his own sin and his understanding of the gospel and all of those things. And so we could say, well, that's good self-care to truly commune with God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in his word and in prayer. And there's ways in which, I mean, we can turn that into a selfish thing and ways in which we can turn that into what I think is a biblical, good, helpful thing that would, you know, fit under this umbrella of rest. So Scott, that's a good question. Any last comments you guys want to make before we wrap this up?
I would just say that to those who are listening, to the youth workers listening, parents listening, you got to rest. You got to practice the Sabbath. That so many of the problems that occur in ministry would be less dramatic, I believe, if we learned to rest and rest well. That's my final thought.
That's a good word. And I mean, just based on this conversation, there's obviously so much more to talk about and we'll continue to have this discussion because we're constantly growing in what it means to rest well, constantly growing and understanding the true rest and Sabbath that we will have one day. So appreciate you guys just jumping in on this conversation and we'll talk again soon.